Chapter 23. Ephraim. Queen. Valdir's goons dumped me unceremoniously onto the gravel. The tack net retracts, leaving patterns of duress on my skin. Griffin set down and Valkyrie women slip from the saddles. Male braves with red runes on their armour land beside them in steaming grav boots. One of them kicks my arse until I stand to my bare feet. They ache from my failed escape and the cold. Did I fracture them when I landed? Anyone got slippers? I ask. None pay me any mind. Fine, socks'll do. You got socks?
They do not like greys, Grania, especially the men. The braves were slave knights in your legions, or gladiators, or worse.
I turn toward the voice. Wrapped in his raven cloak, the shaman sits in the lap of a giant, headless statue, eating walnuts. Oh, you again. He slides down from the statue and wobbles toward me. Valdir barks something in Nagal at him to the effect of, "Try not to lose your idiot again, idiot." The shaman flaps his crow cloak at the warlord and covers his earholes. "You got any more slippers?" I ask him, tightening the fur coat around me for the chill. "Lost the last pair."
"Only a fool gives a gift when the first is valued so little," he says. "I told you your destiny was not out the window. Now you suffer."
"Yeah, well, I'm Hyperionin. We're natural skeptics." He tilts his big head and laughs.
"Maybe next time you are given something, you will value it."
He flicks walnut shells at my right leg. "You gave me this."
"Idea, not money." He touches his chest. "Osgard."
He points at me.
"Grania. It means..."
"Hold up. You're Osgard." He grins.
"Osgard the mad, Osgard the bad, Osgard the berry glad."
He bows. "You're not as blue as I expected."
"Berries only fall when gods dance," he says, glancing at Valdir.
"When do they dance?" I ask. He smiles.
"When blood spills. Worry not. Today for talking only."
Near God-Eater, Valdir has taken off his ridiculous helmet. The champion's face is unusually delicate for an obsidian. His nose is twice broken, his cheeks gaunt and freckled. But all the savagery can't hide the avian structure of his bones, the motes of silver in his black irises, his full, notched lips, and the haughty grandeur of the only human besides Darrow to have survived a duel with a minotaur. Got to admit, he's damn slick. Valdir barks at Osgard, this time motioning with his fingers, and we set off toward a large triumphal arch. The women lead and pay me no mind, but the trailing men catcall me and shove me with their axe hafts when I slow. The path ascends up the spine of the mountain. My raw right foot is yet without calluses, and it's agony on the stone. "What's this all about?" I ask Osgard, panting a little for the elevation.
"You will see."
He begins ticking off fingers as we walk. When he's reached his 12th, I curse. "By Juno's dilapidated tits." The path opens up to a damn impressive sight. Above Eagle Rest, the stone training squares of the Bellona Ludus rib the mountainside, the highest disappearing into the clouds. Where once generations of genetically modified fascist knights trained in the arts of subjugation and extermination, now thousands of obsidian youths practice calisthenics, climbing courses, and weapons training. We make for a lower training square, where a huge crowd of warriors and older students have gathered amongst broken statues. A lone crest of dirty blonde hair moves amongst the white manes. Two trios duel as teams on the training square. Electra, fighting in sync with her trio, is dismantling an obsidian who must have her by 50 kilos. The lad looks as young as you can look, while still having a full beard. It's coated in blood from a nose smashed flat. They wield traditional Aurochs femur practice staves. The opposing group seems to be trying to reach a large skull in the centre of the training square, while Electra's lot defend. Valdir holds us up out of respect for the bout. The obsidians murmur amongst themselves, unable to pass up a wager on blood sport. I've seen kids fight before. It's a bit like drunks fighting underwater. Electras like that, except switch out the water and put in an elastic rubber room, a human-sized needle, and flick it. Yet, for all her mania, she fights as part of her group, switching opponents, using her own allies to guard her blind spots as she strikes. The instructor calls the fight when the last man-boy of the opposing trio stumbles back from a stave to the temple that makes him all soupy. Electra doesn't pursue. Electra and her wing women help the fallen up. All six bare their throats to the instructor, a lithe young obsidian woman with a topknot and black scoogie runes on her face, and to another in the crowd before jogging to sit with other students around the square. The little demon Electra looks right at home. "Children of the tribe are hard," Osgard murmurs to me. "Sent back to ice to learn our ways. Hunt many days, fight with axe from 6 summers to death. Yet Valdir could not put boy and girl with children of tribe. Their spirits are those of wolves." "Boy's all right, girl's straight psycho. It's in the blood." Osgard makes a small sound of disagreement. "The lesson is called the Three Seasons. Do you know this?" I shake my head. "Three seasons of war exist. Wind, fire and ash. Pride, possession, annihilation. Freyhild,
the one who cut off all those syndicate balls."
"Yes," he gestures to the young instructor. "She gave secret order to attacker. Sweep enemy from square, reach skull, or destroy enemy. Girl saw them advance for skull. Girl listened. She became ice, and the enemy wing in the end accepted it was her wing skull. Ownership was respected. A balance found. This pleases the queen."
I follow his eyes to a patch of grass spotted with snow. I've never seen Seffi the Quiet in person. She looks almost inanimate as she sits amongst her Valkyrie on the knoll. All legs and arms. No contained kinetic violence like the Golds, who always seem a hair trigger away from atomic. Only a subdued, sleepy grandeur. Like one of the statues that surround the training square. Her shoulders are broad but bony under a fantastic high-collared white cloak with a blue fur collar. Her right hand is gloved. A crown of what looks like ice sits on her head. She watches intensely as a new batch takes the square, sparing a long look for Valdir, who tilts his chin upward toward his mate. Pax is amongst the new batch. I trace the monsters he's supposed to fight. It's not just the size difference that worries me for the more sensitive of the two gold spawn. It's muscular development. Shy of puberty, Pax isn't yet the man he'll become. Though his bare calves do look more sculpted than's right for a boy, the obsidians are already giants. The three opponents take their places in a triangle and receive their order from Freyhild. Pax's crew form together around their skull, not yet knowing their enemy's intent. Pax seems uninterested. That's a trillion credit skull you're about to let those goons crack, I say. Osgard examines me.
You care about boy? Warmth still in your stone heart. This is good.
It's not a bloody marriage. He's just my meal ticket, but he ain't like the other one.
No, she is better fighter. He is more dangerous human. I warned Queen. He will refuse lesson this time. Rage festers inside. Watch.
The Obsidians bellow a war challenge, which Osgard says is a season of wind. Their intent is to sweep Pax's crew from the square to show their valour. As Pax's wingmen move to the centre, he separates and stands on the very edge of the square. The three enemy don't chase him. They use their numbers to drive his wingmen back and off the square. Then all three come for Pax in a V. As soon as they are in striking range, Pax steps out. The veteran warriors watching howl in condemnation. Pax's enemies declare victory and spurn his cowardice by turning their backs on him. He steps back into the square. Only Valdir smiles. What follows is appalling. Not the violence itself, but its tone of boredom and clinical cruelty. Crack! The sound of femur on skull rattles the training square. One of the Obsidians teeters sideways. The other two brutes wheel around to fight Pax. He silently deconstructs them. He's slower than Electra and almost looks asleep, but every movement is like part of a dance. As if he's seen this all happen before and must bore himself and mock the Obsidians by going through the motions. He doesn't need to, but he collapses the kneecap of one of the older boys and then cracks his skull with a sweep of the stave. As he spins out of the movement, I see his eyes were closed. The other brings his stave down in a diagonal downward strike at Pax's head. Pax falls flat on his back. The stave strikes the ground and shatters. Pax grabs the Obsidian's ankle, pulls himself between the Obsidian's legs, flips around him, ends up on the Obsidian's back, and brings his hand down on the Obsidian's neck. Somehow, he grabbed a shard from the Obsidian's broken stave and buried it 2 fingers deep in his neck.
"Do not move," Pax says. "The bone is 2 millimeters from your carotid artery."
The Obsidian's eyes widen. He goes very still. Pax slides from his back. The watching warriors are disgusted. Not one has moved, not even the instructor. Pax turns to Seffi.
"You mock us?"
Seffi asks in a quiet voice.
"It was the season of wind, not ash." "Mock? No, Your Majesty. I understand the purpose is to instruct me in the old ways of the Obsidian."
He points at Osgard, somehow noticing his arrival.
"Your shaman teaches the children of the ice that war is the first language of all peoples. But not every war need be the last. As a child, I am to be impressed with your wisdom. As hostage, I am to be convinced by inclusion in your tribal rites that I am an ally. As ward, I am to impart this lesson upon my own people. To be friend of the Obsidians, who showed me their sacred rituals and treated me with respect. What pity is it that there will be no Obsidians left?"
The braves stand at this insult. Not rising to the insult itself, Valdir watches the reactions of his fellows with careful consideration. So he's a thinking monster. Rather handsome, too, if you can get over the batwing ears.
"Gods forbid I insult your pride," Pax crows. "I wonder you have any left. If you still think war is a dialogue, allow me to remind you the goals of the core do not believe you are human beings. You are cattle. They treated the seasons of war
so the tribes would be locked in eternal strife. They did not want their herd culled. They wanted it honed to better wage their wars. From the crib, the children of peerless Skard are now raised to know one truth. War is not for pride or for land. War is for extermination. Valdir the Unshorn knows this. He served beside Ragnar's father, Palehorse, as a slave knight in the Grimmer's legions, then beside my father and Ragnar, who put the razor in his hand. Many of your blood braves have seen this in their service. Never has it been more evident than upon Mercury, where my father faces atomic annihilation.
So the red prick ended up back on Mercury. Must have been a gold counterattack. Is he still a fugitive? But you, scurrilous lot, you hide from that truth behind tradition. You abdicate oaths to feign wisdom. There is no wisdom in the company of deserters. There is only shame. You left your morning star to face your common enemy alone. But do not fret. His grin is the nasty sort I didn't know he had in him.
It will be short-lived when the engines of doom kill my father and arrive on Mars to chase even the oathbreakers to their graves. Make no mistake, Sephi, queen of the Obsidians. This is no war of wind or fire.
He gestures to the dismantled obsidian youth around him, with pity to the one holding the bone fragment in his neck.
This is a war of annihilation, and you are outmatched by the darker breed of my kind. I am the son of the Morning Star, the flesh and blood of the man who broke your chains. Yet you hold Electra and me as insurance, and to bargain for ships and information. So I look upon you with my father's eyes to ask, what do your old ways say of honour?
He drops the femur and walks out, leaving the obsidians in stony silence. Damn, son. I scratch my leg, remembering what an idiot I was at his age. Electra rushes to catch up to Pax. Sephi watches them go and signals their guards to follow. But the accusations Pax made remain in his wake. All is not well in the war bands of the Obsidian host. Talk about a guilt trip.
Yes, he is precocious,
Osgard murmurs, clearly disagreeing with Pax. Oddly, Valdir does not. His eyes watch Pax with something like sorrow, and when he marches down to meet his queen, it is as if the weight of 10 worlds were on his shoulders. His anxiety evaporates only when he passes by the instructor Freyhild. She takes pains not to meet his eyes. She is a pretty young thing, lithe instead of muscular, without the hirsute appearance so common in her people. File that one away for later. I am led down to Sephi. Despite just being dressed down by a prepubescent plutocrat, she is more impressive than her reputation, and it is a colossal reputation. Warlord, gold killer, hero of the Rat War, sister of the demigod Ragnar Volaris, queen of the Obsidians. She's not barbarically handsome like Valdir, or lively like Freyhild. Instead, she's a cold fusion between worlds. A horizontal iron bar punctures her nose at the bridge, even as a cochlear implant blinks in her ear. Astral runes mark the shaved sides of her head. A datapad is embedded in her left forearm. Her eyes are large black marbles, but in the right light show fibres of optic implants. A second set of blue eyes are tattooed on her eyelids. 14 long, heavy knuckle fingers fold together in her lap, stroking her valor tail. And then I see the weapon she wears, the inert blade of the razor that punched through Trigg's chest 10 years ago is coiled around the long leather glove that reaches up to the elbow. The same blade that killed her brother, Ragnar. I blink like a dumb black-tooth addict. Thought Barker owned Ajar's blade. Valdir kneels before his mate and bares his throat before announcing me and stepping to the side. Seffi raises an eyebrow at my bloody feet and knees.
He is guest, Valdir.
He dressed himself while falling out a window. Climb in gracefully, I correct. Niagahe, Skati, I say to Seffi, baring my throat in respect and submission. Valdir is shocked I know any Nagal. Seffi is not surprised. She accepts my respect with an open palm to show she holds no weapon against me.
Nia Gahirgra? Hia Ganga Ni Hala?
She nods to the white who stands behind her clutch of Valkyrie.
Xenophon said you knew our ways. Fotahail.
Sorry? Nagal's a little rusty.
Lim is healthy?
Seems like. I wiggle the appendage. Surprise you sprung for flesh tech, not cheap. Suppose I should thank you for that.
It is a gift,
she shrugs.
My court is large from long war. I welcome all, including you, Scar Hunter.
She says the title fondly and tilts her head.
Your body wanted death. Your heart is not pure. It became silent 3 times. Narcotics weakness.
Valdir makes a sound of disgust and lies down on the ground beside his mate to comb his hair. He looks like a bloody Frankish painting.
Valdir thinks you are stupid to use Zoladone.
He is stupid, Valdir says. Seffi sets a hand on his shoulder.
He thinks that I am stupid to waste wind on you.
She spares a smile for Osgard.
But I know weakness in your kind does not mean broken. So tell me, why kill passions with Zoladone?
I glance at Aja's razor.
Makes life's flow a bit smoother. Poor little man.
She mocks.
Life is meant to be felt. Else, why live? Valleys make the mountains.
I nod to Osgard, who has strayed back to the training square to examine the blood on the stone. That fellow right there is high as a cloud. He seems to be living just fine.
Fool's comparison. God's bread fills warrior with heat of gods. Spirit berry opens mind. Let's one hear Aesir. Zoladone makes warrior cold, narrows mind, makes machine man vile.
And fever cloud, I ask. Your berserkers love that. Her face darkens.
Berserkers are no more. Fever is an evil I do not accept. It makes men savages. We are not savages.
The only other colour on the knoll beside obsidian is a lean white in midnight robes. It's a logos. I thought they were all killed by lynch mobs. Bald, childish of face, the white could be 30 or 80 years old. You never can tell. Their skin is a colour of raw chicken, their eyes the colour of milk. A large diamond is embedded between the eyes to signify their class. If anyone's on a permanent Zoladone high, it's that mammalian computer. I don't point out the hypocrisy.
With Spirit Berry, Osgard sees God's hand upon your shoulder,
Seffi continues.
He is responsible for the breath you draw. You crashed in a scrapland. Scavengers found you. There were brothers of the ice amongst them. They are known to Osgard and offered you to me.
Well, that's a turn. And the wee warlords must have cost you a fortune to outbid the sovereign.
My respect was payment enough to them.
Syndicate must have loved that.
They attempted to substantiate their claim,
the white says. The Unshorn disabuse them of that notion. Whatever malice Valdir Unshorn feels for Osgard, he seems to trust the White. He nods to the advisor like an old friend.
So if the kids are your hostages and we're here, I murmur.
Wards? Seffi corrects.
Sure. Then I take it to mean I'm not on Barker's menu?
Why would we fix you to kill you? That would waste money. You have not hurt all tribe.
I completely agree, but ain't you allies with the Sovereign and House Barker? I've never heard of the term all tribe before, but one thing at a time. Hell, till that kid started talking, I thought you were still the Reaper's heavy air cav.
By glancing around at the faces of her warriors, I can tell that's old news, but still raw, particularly for the males.
World changes fast. Was it Wolfgar's death, or something else? If they aren't allies, then my errand for the Sovereign has probably been perceived as a double cross, which means Volga is likely dead back on Luna. I need Zolodone. The ache inside nearly makes the knees buckle.
So I'm thinking I'm alive for a reason, I say.
It ain't gratitude for this little boon. It ain't fidelity for an old scar hunter. I've been thoroughly reminded what you lot do to thieves. I glance at Valdir. So maybe tell me what this is all about.
Seffi surprises me by standing.
Come, Mr. Horn. There is something I would like to show you.
Seffi leads me from the training ludus through hangars that once held Bellona Warcraft. Within the stone caverns, a nation of people is set to one industry, knowledge. Obsidian youths labour beside old women, young men, war-tested braves, learning skills that 10 years ago were forbidden to them under pain of liquidation. They study under orange master mechanics, blue navigators, mapping astral trajectories, and training in flight simulators. They work with green coders, yellow doctors, and red builders. It's an odd sight.
Seffi says nothing as we walk, and by the time we end our little tour in another garden of broken Bellona statues, my head is full, my eyes are struggling to stay narrowed in contempt, and my bare feet ache like hell.
Seffi gestures for me to sit at a long table set for two. Pale faces marked with black runes watch from the shadows of the garden. Skugi. A chill goes down my spine as I sit down. The spirit assassins. Valdir's eyes linger on them before he sits on the rubble of a statue. The chair is a relief for my leg. A bowl of warm water filled with black flowers is brought for my feet by a stunning pink servant. I sigh as I dip my feet in, and feeling returns to them, along with a peculiar tingling that must be from the flowers. Osgard murmurs there is night gaze in the water before wandering to the garden. Night is coming. The sun ebbs in the sky. Battered Olympia sulks beneath Eagle Rest, toward Loch Esmeralda, like a centurion's wet cape, and I sit with a queen.
You're breaking with the Republic, I say, tightening my fur coat.
That's what you mean by all tribe.
She says nothing.
You already united Obsidians in war, promising them a homeland, didn't you? Looks like you found one.
I glance down at Olympia, but Seffi's eyes are on the horizon beyond. That's trouble.
On the ice, when a limb is sick, it is cut away to save the body. The Republic rots from inside with weakness, like you, before we cured you. My people must prosper. This is the burden my brother set upon me. To prosper, we must become one tribe. So I will found a kingdom for my people, for all Obsidians. Volkland, her Valkyrie whisper, rattling their talks at the holy word.
I begin to laugh, first the reds, now the cold bloods. From his seat at the base of a statue, Valdir pulls his axe.
"He does not mock me, Valdir," Seffi says. "He mocks life. Is that not right, Mr. Horn?"
"Close enough. You're buying yourself another war."
"We know war,"
Valdir says in dismissal. "With your old pal the Reaper?" I ask, causing him to stand up. "Ask Gold how fun that is."
"Valdir is a warrior, honest and proud," Seffi says, waving her mate down.
Valdir simmers in discontent, and I don't think it's just aimed at me.
"He speaks truth, because he lives true. We know war, but it is not all we know or will know. 7 centuries, they say, kill, so we kill. 7 centuries, they say, send sons to stars, so we send sons. Republic says we are free. Then Senate says, obey, send sons and daughters to stars. Kill for us, die for us. We ask only for homeland. They give rocky islands on earth. We ask for city, because we are not savages who want to fish all day."
She waves at Eagle Rest and Olympia.
"They give broken ruins and say, be satisfied. What is there for us on Mercury? We cannot live under weight of sun. We are hated there. So now we say the word Ragnar taught us. No. Now we embrace the truth Morningstar taught us. Destiny is not given. Destiny is taken."
So much for Seffi the Quiet. I look for Osgard. I wonder if it was this destiny he saw in the bones of a fire, as he claims to have seen mine. I find him climbing a tree toward an owl's nest. Fitting. I sigh. "What do you need me to steal? Come on, you don't have to butter me up." Not feeling very masculine with my feet in the little bowl of water, I slap my leg. "Call in your debt." Seffi remains quiet as the slender pink now brings a bottle of wine. He shows her the seal to prove it hasn't been tampered with, and pours it into 3 golden goblets.
"Thank you, Amel," Seffi says.
The white Logos steps forward to sip the wine, swishes it in his mouth, swallows, and nods as it detects no pathogens. Straight eerie Logos shit. Even arbiters like Oslo, my Ophian Guild contact, are wary of Logos. They're null as a doll down below, and on a permanent Zolodone high. Only the richest gulls could afford them for trophies. It seems Seffi collects rare creatures and rare wine. She sniffs the wine in her goblet.
"What do you want me to steal?" I repeat as she takes a sip.
She looks both insulted and mildly amused by my tone. How long since anyone's had the guts to give her lip when she's got men like Valdir by the balls?
"Of all the words in common, do you know my favourite?" she asks.
"Jove on high. Destiny? Voluble? Captive audience?" She leans forward.
"Practical. Nagal is the superior language to common. It conveys the soul better and has more beautiful words. Weldschmer. The pain in discovering the world fails to fulfill expectation. Fenwer. The longing to be somewhere else. But we have no word for practical. Only honourable or shameful."
Her eyes look through me.
"You are this way. I need practical men. As master mechanics teach our lame and weak, as blues teach our small and bright, you will teach my Skugi."
She makes a clicking sound, and Freyhild, the instructor from the training, steps from the shadows of the garden along with several other Skugi. They're all young, but none are beautiful like Freyhild. Her face, though tattooed with subtle black markings, is unscarred. Her cheekbones are sharp, her eyes slanted, and as close to dark blue as obsidian black. All the Skugi are more slender than Valdir or the brutish Valkyrie, more like deer than elk. Freyhild even has the eyelashes of a deer. Valdir notices too, don't you, boy? Teach them what exactly? I ask. I'm no assassin. They're the best.
We are not, Freyhild says in a slow, mocking voice. The Howlers and Gorgon are the best. It is truth.
Good thing you kept one of them as allies, eh? Freyhild is amused.
My Skugi are orphans from ruins of shattered tribes, Seffi says. They promise their spirits to their queen. Their loyalty is beyond the flesh, so their wombs are stripped. Their seed made infertile by my shaman. But do you know why my Skugi are not the best?
She motions for Freyhild to step back.
Not because we do not know how to walk with the silent shadow or bring the long death, but because howlers and gorgons are more than assassins. My Skugi are not. They provide one solution, death. Practical creatures provide many solutions. For Red Hand death works. Skugi have hunted them these last weeks. 6,000 they have killed for me. Red Hand flees. The Republic was too soft on them. Soon they will be no more. But I will need my Skugi to beat the Gorgons, to beat the Howlers if necessary. Teach them to be freelancers, to melt into city, to exist behind enemy lines, to gain allies, to sow discord.
She points a long finger of a gloved hand at me.
You stole the sovereign's child. You will give us your knowledge.
If she wants a kingdom, she knows she'll have to play dirty, like all the rest. With a grunt, Valdir bursts to his feet and stalks away. Seffi watches him go with a strange expression.
My mate believes we are mistaken to leave the Reaper. He does not wish us to change or practice shameful arts. But he is just a man. Men are impulsive and blinded by the snake between their legs.
Won't argue that. Then I say, with narrowed eyes, Skugi are sacred to your people, servants of All-Mother Death, yes? Valdir won't be the only one pissed. Your braves know it might have been gold that held the chain, but grey was the chain. You ate us even more than you ate them. She makes a dismissive motion. Your Majesty, I've seen berserkers rape wounded legionnaires on the battlefield as they scalp them. Your berserkers. I don't have any loyalty to the Legion, but those Greys were my people. Gold might be scariest. You might be biggest. Red might be toughest. Grey, we got the longest memory. The idea of teaching the Skugi to become even more effective makes me nauseous. This is selling my soul in a way I never considered.
That world is past. Not all of the clans believe as I do. They resist change, but they follow strength. I am strength.
Seffi runs a long finger over the rim of her wine cup.
You are cunning. You made fool of Lionheart and the Fox Lords. I want that cunning. I know how this world works. I am willing to make you a very rich man.
And if I say no?
You are guest. When safe, you will be free.
Free to be tossed off a high cliff by Valdir, more like.
But a man on his own is nothing. You will be hunted by Syndicate, Julii, Lion, Republic, Goblin.
You will be no man, no half, no blood, no Aeta, no hand to carry your cold body to the sky when they find you.
Cat's got nothing on me. I lean forward with a feline grin. I got 1,000 lives. They can each have one. Anyway, Mars is for suckers. I got business on Luna.
You speak of your woman?
Her eyes glimmer as I flinch.
Volga Fjorgen is on Luna no longer. Xenophon?
The white steps forward.
6 weeks ago, 2 known members of the Horn Gang were abducted from Augustan property and are currently on Phobos, pending transfer to Mars.
I glance up at the twin moons moving over the city.
Nah.
Citadel is impenetrable. Places crawling with heavies, tech even I've never seen. The Minotaur got chewed up with a full century of Peerless, real Peerless. I squint at them. They don't look like they are capable of bluffing.
Who?
The Julii, the white says. She doesn't have the skill set.
But she has something better. Money,
Seffi replies.
Xenophon explains. Ignorant of Virginia's deal with you, she employed the freelancer known as the Figment to collect your gang members as leverage against you, after frontal confrontation with the Sovereign promised to escalate.
That's psycho. A chill goes through me, but it makes sense. Birds of a feather and all that. I squint at Seffi.
You said 2. Who's the extra?
The Red, Xenophon replies.
Your inside woman.
Lyria?
Lyria of bloody damn Largolos?
I can't even laugh. I thought she was a cooked little rabbit. I lean back over the railing, mind whirling like a Rubicon wheel. Get out, old boy. Save your precious skin while you can. But this voice is quieter without the Z. Lyria of Largolos and Volga Fjorgen, alive after all. And above Mars. What a thing.
That settles it. Even if I pretend it doesn't. Of course I have to throw a fit first, but I'd have had to agree anyway just to survive the meeting. Now I actually might stick around till I get what I need.
How do you know they're alive? I ask. If the Julii took them.
A holo appears in Seffi's long hand. It is of a cell.
Inside, Volga rocks back and forth.
The poor girl. I see her smiling on race day in Hyperion, laughing at the bar, offering me a cocktail. She was just a kid when I pulled her in. I was all she had. But she didn't have me. Not really. I bite my tongue bloody so I don't belt out into tears. Without the Z-valve, it's all so much. Her image flickers away. The cold bitch queen stares at me.
The Julii does not waste resources. I told her I would pay her for their release. If you pledge fealty to me, they are yours.
Don't do it, old boy. She's going to die bad. Dreamers all do, don't you know? But some greater, hungrier part of me scrambles after this new flicker of hope.
Volga. I'm going to save you, Snowball. Treat you like the queen you are.
What's the Julii paying you for the kids?
I ask, trying to distract myself and them.
Got to be a big nut.
That is not your concern, Seffi says. Your answer?
Time seems to thicken. I find myself nodding.
No fealty, I say. I'm no one's dog, and I'm sure as Hades not dying on Mars. You draw up a contract with Amani Gill Specs.
Xenophon produces a holo document from a data pad and flicks it to the table.
Seffi smiles.
She knows who she's doing business with, clever girl. I glance through it. It's Amani Gill Specs, all right, not some savage blood oath. Maybe the world is changing.
Seffi sips her wine as I eye the particulars. 3-year sunset clause. Contract void if I take Zolodone. What is it with everyone? Recognition of Skoogie deathmark on my life if I skip out? That's fun and probable. I breeze to the remuneration and feel my toes tingle. The girls in 6 weeks, a quarter kilo of grade A diamonds in a Martian month, a ship with the deed, a signing bonus of 25 million credits. Fuck me. They're overpaying by kilometre. I want the girls on signature. No, Xenophon says predictably, you are a flight risk. Then double the monthly salary, a half kilo plus expenses. Gonna be killing my neutral reputation throwing my lot in with black ops spirit killers, and my girls need retirement money. The white begins to say no, but I cut it off. Listen, Milky, you're the one with the scarcity problem. Fix my leg up, spared me from the howlers. You need me for something you can't do, and I'm betting it ain't just teaching Skoogie. None of them react, but that's not saying much for these folk. You can't move your army from Earth without showing your cards. I get it. But that means something's coming. You'll tell me when I need to know. That's fine. But I'm getting hazard pay, because I'm sure it's going to be manic.
You think highly of your talents, Mr. Horn, Seffi says. Or very little of your life.
Now it's 1 kilo. Want to go for 2? I put my hand out for the kill. Seffi's entourage tenses at the insult. Even gibbering black teeth know obsidian rules of contact. But then she surprises me. My hand disappears beneath her 7 gloved fingers.
To a fruitful endeavour, she says.
One more task.
The Reaper's boy is fond of you. He resists us. Bring him close. We may need insurance.
Sure, yeah, whatever. I grin as she releases my hand. I got you, Snowball. Just hold on, and I got you.